Welcome to the NBA Coast to Coast podcast brought to you by thelines.com. Coming to you from the West Coast, Josh Lander, joined by Nate Weitzer. He's on the East Coast. And we have one more day of NBA regular season action that Nate and I are bringing to you. We're going to be coming back next week as soon as these playoffs get started, too. We got those play-in games. We're going to have some futures looks as well for you guys to see if there's some good future value on some of these teams in the playoffs and postseason here moving forward. Definitely want to make sure you are subscribed to that page so you can continue to follow along with us throughout this postseason. And watch those player prop videos that we have up as well. We're bringing those alongside these best bets each and every weekday moving forward. Maybe some weekend videos out there, too, with some pretty good playoff slates, obviously. Also want you to head to the lines. .com and use everything we have up there right now to help you with all these NBA best bets that you are making moving forward. Nate, let's go ahead and get into your first best bet of this last regular season video for us.
Yeah, I'm going one game that matters and one that doesn't really, but this Cavs-Pacers game is very important for seeding, and I'm going to go under 233.5. That's where you can get the number right now. It might move a point in either direction because it's styles make fights here. I mean, it's the Pacers want to go fast. They want to get into a high-scoring game. The Cavs, they have to know that's not how you beat the Indiana Pacers. And, in fact, they did accomplish a slower-paced win last meeting, 108-103, way under this with a 93.5 pace. There was no Donovan Mitchell in that game, but there was also no Evan Mobley, who has a 106 defensive rating his last four against the Pacers and is – obviously one of the most versatile and important defenders out there. Even without Mobley, they held Indy to 9 for 38 from 3. And their last five, they've held Indy to 11 for 32 from 3, which is 34%, which would be fourth in the NBA post-All-Star break. Now, I mean, the Cavs, their defense has not been good against everybody else. They have been clearly lapsing in terms of, like, concentration. I mean, they let the Memphis Grizzlies go off in the first half in their last game. But I mean, I think now they're going to kind of like lock in, because not only are you fighting for seeding, you're fighting to potentially not fall to sixth and draw the New York Knicks again in a potential 3-6 situation, right? And they have to be having nightmares about that series last year. They're going to have a better shot against anybody else. So, I mean, their defense, I was banking on that getting right against Memphis. It did in the second half, at least, after some lapses. And well, I mean, their defense has been struggling. So has the offense. I mean, with Donovan Mitchell just not even close to full strength. And the big thing here is without Donnie creating offense on his own, they've been heavily assist dependent. They have the number one assist to field goal ratio post All-Star break versus league average pre All-Star break. And Indy is number two limiting assists per game on the road since the All-Star break. Also number three limiting three-pointers and attempts. And then if you get into a close game, which I certainly expect, given the stakes here, in the fourth quarter at home, the Cavs are playing at an 88 pace. That is slowest in the league by far. They are also fifth in net rating, so they are dictating their style and playing that slow, grinded out style. And the Pacers, when they're sixth in pace, is still only a 96 pace, and they're depending on assists down the stretch. I mean, they depend on assists all the time. The Cavs have been good limiting that lately. And I just think that they will bring their A game defensively here.
Hopefully. I mean, yeah, you're starting to believe in that Cavs defense a lot more than I think maybe I am and have been as of late, when they've been a much more offensive minded team, which is weird because Evan Mobley came back and Donnie Mitchell's been off. Like you mentioned, he's definitely not himself right now. Had a good game last game, but I'm still not convinced just yet about him. So that would help you with the under. I think it's a good bet. I think it's at 233.5. My fear would simply just be obviously normal stuff, Indiana taking it to him, but on the road as well for Indy, I think you're in a better spot here with Cleveland trying to keep this under as the best way for them to win. So that's what I agree with, is the game theory and the game plan for this Cavs team, much more than the Pacers, obviously. But for my first game here, I'm going with an over in this Pellies and Dubs game. And I do like the Dubs. They've gotten bet up. I believe they're mostly 5 or -4.5 right now. So I think the over is a bit safer, mostly because of the Dubs, right? And you've got them in a situation now back to back. They did not play Draymond last night. They did not play Klay Thompson against the Blazers. I kind of wish I would have given that out at like +14.5 for the Blazers. It was like such an obvious look ahead moment for that Dubs team. And it didn't really occur to me until like a little bit before game time where I was like, wait, what are we doing here? Like, Steph has made clear, like, he's not trying. He's definitely taken a somewhat not he's taking a step back straight up because he wanted to basically, one, make sure he had his stamina, two, make sure this team wasn't completely reliant upon him to put up the, you know, 26 shots in order for them to have a chance to win because of where they're going on offense. And so as a result, their offense has been a lot better in the last roughly like seven games because of the fact that they've been moving the ball around a lot more. Their offensive rating has jumped back up, whereas they were relying on their defense when they went on that East Coast trip and were playing teams like Miami and Orlando. Now they're back out west, and they're facing teams that are playing a little bit faster and playing a little bit more offense, and that's what they've shown as well. On no rest for this Warriors team, they're putting up 120 a game, 119.9 to be completely exact, and giving up 114. So they're looking at some pretty nice overs there consistently on no rest. 9-7 to the over overall, but covering that total by about 4.5 points each time, so comfortably over on their totals. And 10-5 against the spread as well, which is like the third best cover percentage in the league on no rest this season, which not something you would have necessarily predicted for this team. And they have played their young guys a bit more, but now we're going to be seeing Draymond and Klay, right? Now that's why they rested against Portland, was to give them the ability to play 32 to 35 minutes in this game against the Pellies. And when those dudes are in, you're talking about a bit more pace as well. 99 pace, because you've got, you know, even if Chris Paul's on the floor, he's on the floor with Draymond and Steph and Klay, not just with he and like TJD and B-Pod or something like that, right? Where it's they're playing at like a 90 pace versus when these starters are in for the most of the game and they're playing at about 100 pace. A little bit over that. So if you look at the two matchups between these two teams, not one without BI, and that's where Golden State blew him out. Then when BI came back, New Orleans blew him out. And now we're going back to no BI and pretty much the exact same situation and lineups that we had the last time these teams played with BI out. And this Golden State Warriors team won by a large margin there, right? And each time these games have gone over because one team gets above 130. In fact, the Pellies scored 140 on this ragged band of Warriors players that they were actually going up against in their last one. For Golden State, I think a big part of them winning this game is going to be their defensive field goal percentage around the rim. And the reason I like the over, though, is their ability to shoot and that Pelicans defense giving up a lot of open threes as of late, especially above the break. And if there is a team in the history of the NBA you do not want to allow above the break threes to, it is this Golden State Warriors team. On the season, the Pellies had been really, really good at defending that, and they're a little bit more hurt than they were, obviously, and they're relying on CJ even more, which is a detriment to their defense for sure. But he's been absolutely crushing it with his above the break stuff as well as his mid-range and getting into that floater range as well. And those are the two best spots to be able to score against this Dubs team in that little in the paint but not in the restricted area, right? Extended paint area, and then in that mid-range where I think he'll be good to go. Spot up shooters have had some success against Golden State as well. Zion is a different beast coming at the rim against you than maybe some of the other forwards that this Warriors team has been pretty good at limiting rim and paint touches to. That's not going to be the case with Zion. I mean, even if they collapse on him, which I don't expect them to do because they really do play tougher defense out on the perimeter and then give you a little bit more down low because they don't expect you to be able to get there with their really good wing defense and like I said, defense around that area. So I think Zion will be have some success getting to the rim and will be doing it quite frequently. And that will at least help us get to this over on their side, as well as the fouls. That's the big thing, is if a team gets to the free throw line a lot and attacks the rim like this Pelicans team will do, and you're playing this Dubs team, I expect you to get to the free throw line a good amount and slow down this game and keep those points increased.
Yeah, I mean, I just like the Dubs here. I think I would take their team total before the over. It's only 112.5. And Pelicans obviously had a real game last night at Sacramento. Trey Murphy played 45 minutes. CJ played 40. Zion hurt his wrist, right, and played through it. Like, who knows how effective he'll be. But the Warriors, I mean, if they're going to drop 134 on the Lakers in a big game that we thought they didn't necessarily need, and now, I mean, they did need it because now they're jockeying ahead and they're going to keep building momentum. One of the hottest teams in the league right now. So I think with the rest advantage here, based on that, I mean, the last two times these teams have met, the team with better rest has just absolutely run away and dropped a huge total here. So whether it's -4 or team total, I'd be on the Warriors for sure. Probably drags us over the game total though. Yeah. As well. I am just going team total here in OKC because the Milwaukee Bucks might throw out their JV squad, their freshman squad, perhaps. I mean, they got to play either Bobby Portis or Brooke Lopez. Otherwise, they have no center. But assumedly, at least one is sitting. We know there's no Giannis. So I'll go Thunder to score 120 at home because these Thunder do not play around when you throw a junk lineup at them, as we literally just saw with the Spurs. When they don't play Wemby, they are just an absolute joke. And the Thunder drop about 70 in the first half. They were happy to play at a 119 pace in the first half on a back-to-back. And this Thunder team was just like, sure. Their last seven against what I would qualify as tankers, averaging 123 a game. Last six against tankers at home, 128 a game. Absolutely crushing people, including sometimes on short rest. And I mean, yeah, this Bucks squad, it is a tanker. If your starting lineup is maybe Campaign, Pat Bev, Beasley, Crowder, I don't even know if they have a center, if they rest all these guys listed. We know Dame's doubtful. Middleton is going to be managed. I wanted the over for this game. It's only 223, but I can't trust the Bucks to score, right? I just don't know. I mean, they could find ways to get there, but their defense is just going to be a disaster. And Danilo Gallinari will get some minutes here against a fast OKC team that's just going to absolutely use him as a traffic cone. You like the OKC bench so much more, right? If this is a blowout quickly, like we saw with Shea only playing 26 minutes last time, then we get guys who can still get buckets. I mean, we're seeing Trey Mann light it up. He couldn't even crack the rotation on this team. Without Giannis, the Bucks' defensive rating is 121.5 this year. They allow 117 a game. They allow 118. They're three without Brolo. This will be the first time, assuming Brolo does rest, because the Bucks are just looking for this game against the Magic to lock up their seeding. They haven't both missed a game together. And this drop defense they play, where one of those guys has to be at the back line, it's probably going to be a defensive disaster without them. OKC still very much playing for something, right? Tied for number two, and probably really wants that two, because they've had some tough games against NOLA. They've pretty much clowned the Phoenix Suns 3-0 this year. And if you get the two, that's who you're probably getting out of the play-in at this stage. But in any case, I mean, like I said, they just don't care if you throw a joke at them. They will absolutely just take care of business. There are no lapses from this team.
Yeah. I got them at -10.5 last night. Obviously, we didn't put a video together, and they're already at -15.5 on most books. And that would have been my favorite bet, was just them to win by double digits, to be honest, because like you said, like, this is a total punt situation for the Bucks. I think the first half maybe for the Thunder on the spread there, it's going to be pretty high, though. If you can get 7.5, I think it's a lot better than 8.5 even. But yeah, there's a couple ways to play this. And I do think it's mostly just bet on this Thunder team, man. It's really that simple. I think there's going to be some threes coming into play here as well, like you were mentioning, with that drop defense coming in and even fewer guys there. So, I mean, how crazy is it that Micić and Trey Mann are as good as they are, and they couldn't even find minutes on this team? That's what happens when you have 27 first round picks over the course of 7 years, right? You're gonna have some pretty deep teams. Whenever it gets into the situation where we expect some bench play from this Thunder squad, then we're still good with overs, because we've still got legitimate NBA players on their bench that can run. So they'll keep it fast. I think the points are good here, especially for them. And I don't trust the Bucks to come along at all. So I don't even really trust the over in the game. Like you said, everything's just gotten out of hand with the lines all over the place for this one. But let me close it out here. In New York, where the Nets and the Knicks are taking each other on at Barclays. So I guess a home game for the Nets. But I'm going to take this Knicks over 110.5 team total here. And that's dwindling, because it's actually gone up a bit as well to 111.5 on a lot of books. But you can get
the game's at MSG, though, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Great. My bad. There's been some weird stuff lately. I'm telling you. I know I sound like I'm making excuses, but like, sometimes Action Network will have this team listed incorrectly. Some of these data, whatever. Point being, it's in New York, and it was going to be a home game for the Knicks anyway. That was the joke I was trying to pull off. It failed. But for why the Knicks are going to score in this one, 110.5. That's just what they've been doing. Now, you have to decide if you believe in what the Knicks have been for their last 10 games, or you have to decide that you think the way that these two teams normally play each other is the way to go here. I don't trust the Nets to come along for the ride. They are at 99.5 for their team total, because they actually have failed to score 100 points against this Knicks team a couple times in their last couple seasons against them. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. My thing is that if you're a jump shooting team against the Knicks right now, you're going to be in a little bit better position to score than if you're trying to actually get to the rim, especially with Mitch Rob back for about 20 to 23 minutes per game, which has been it's been really helpful. And now, granted, like, overall on defense, they're not the same team, which I think is only helpful here. They've actually been in the bottom 10 in defensive rating over their last 10 games, which is not something you expect to see from them. They're still playing at a very slow pace, but they're a jump shooting team as well. And so if they're going to continue to take shots pretty early in the shot clock, because they're just pulling threes, right? They're second most threes per game over their last percentage of their points that they're scoring off a three and percentage of their shots that they're taking off a three. We saw this from them for a while last season, and they've really come back to that because it's a lot of small ball and then one center, right? And we're not really seeing a Precious, Achiuwa, and a Hartenstein lineup ever together anymore. You don't need it when you have 6'4 power forward Josh Hart pulling down whatever he had last night, 22 rebounds, like, you know, get just ridiculous amount of rebounds. So they're very well equipped to play a little bit smaller, which should just keep things moving against this team in the Nets, who have relied on keeping Nick Claxton in there a lot more as, when they play this team. And I still think he'll get decent minutes, but that's not necessarily going to be enough, especially because the Knicks have been scoring a lot of what they're doing in the mid-range and the three and going to the basket a little bit, but a lot more shooting from out far, further away, right? A lot of stuff from the corner threes and the above the break threes for sure, which is the only place you can really shoot them. But the other thing here too is the offensive rebounds, and I think that is if, with the jump shooting team, you're going to see pretty good offensive rebound percentages, which is what we've seen from the Knicks over the course of their last 10. Once again, they're second in offensive rebound percentage. The Nets are giving up the eighth most second chance points and have not really been able to limit that. They went from a pretty good rebounding team earlier in the season to just not one anymore, and they are, for a team that has not full on just declared by resting guys that they're tanking, this is the worst team in the NBA that isn't clearly tanking, even if it is tanking, right, in the Nets. And as much as that defense has been actually pretty good in swarming down low, like, we're just seeing a lot of Watford and Cam Thomas and guys that, and I mean, even McHale has just basically phoned it in. I don't know what's going to happen to that dude in the coming years after this contract that he's on, but there's just not much to like in the way that they're giving up, like I said, those second chance points, and it's hustle points. They were getting a lot of points off of turnovers. Now they're giving up points off of turnovers for the Nets. So if the Knicks are going to keep playing that press D, getting those points off of turnovers like they have against a team that's really just sloppy at this point on both sides of the floor, then like 111 points, something they've done eight of their last 10 games, it's something I'm going to feel, you know, at least decent enough to lay a little bit on there.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have the pulse on the Knicks, I guess, last night, or really the Celtics, who just didn't much care to give a full effort or even try to get a defensive rebound. The Nets have kind of been playing that way for months, though. So to say like, oh, well, they're going to be geared up for this crosstown rivalry, I don't know. Perhaps. I mean, this is certainly a game for them to get charged up for and to try to muck it up and keep it low scoring. But like you said, I mean, the Knicks, just their efficiency is ridiculous. They're on a roll right now, even though they're playing slow. Brunson is getting them a bucket more often than not. I'm not going to talk you off this. This is your charge, your team that you follow. But I did try to talk you into the Sixers to score 110 as well, with the Magic coming to town in a big game there. And I'll just say, let's take some Joel Embiid props, and we'll bring you that in player props coming up next, though.
Yeah, I was actually trying to target his first quarter stuff, and it's out of control. I think there is some thought process that like they'd like to blow out the Magic a bit if they can. If Franz doesn't play, that's going to be a lot more possible for that team. I would say with this Knicks squad, yeah, it really just comes down to like there's nobody trying. I mean, they have a legit shot at the two seed, right, which is wild. They really do have. If they win out, and we expect Milwaukee to lose tonight as they're sitting everybody, then you have to feel pretty good about that. And Milwaukee's last game is Orlando, and the Knicks' last game is the Bulls, right? So they see the path to that two seed, and that would be wild.
Yeah. But if you want it, cause you might get the 76ers if you're the two seed.
I know it's a tough game to play, man. The beauty of the play-in tournament is that you can't really just shuffle yourself into a specific spot anymore and just kind of nest into the two or three or feel comfortable anymore, especially with Joel missing time. So it's going to be super fun. Definitely want to check out that futures video that we'll have up for you. Nate, we're going to jump right into our first NBA play a prop here. The former MVP of the league, Joel Embiid.
The would-be MVP if he played the entire season. I mean, absolutely. Just scoring at an unprecedented level, and he seems to be back to form. I mean, 36 minutes, 36 points against Detroit, granted, but I mean, more importantly, that was over 2 days ago, and he sat the second half of a back-to-back before that. So I'll take him 30.5 points. Caesars is offering a much better line than anybody else right now. I mean, most places you have to go to 31.5 to get normal juice. Also intrigued by +140 for him to hit two threes, since he's really been more comfortable taking threes since he's come back. It seems like he's done that in three straight. He took 9 threes against Detroit. You know, he's just kind of clowning on people to be like, or you know, he's protecting himself. Like, I'm not going to go in there and hurt this knee in some way. I'm skilled enough to just take you out on the perimeter, Wendell Carter, and you know, use my guard skills and just knock down shots. But I mean, typically dominant Embiid. I mean, Maxey has a few more touches than him, but he's getting 50 touches per game in the front court, scoring 0.7 points per elbow touch or per post touch. And it's just historic numbers from him. He's got to the free throw line double digit times in 3 of 4, not against Miami, as we kind of indicated might be the case, but against Orlando, he's gotten to the free throw line 13 times per game in his last 6, averaged 35 points, has a 50 burger in there, dropped 36 last time out at Orlando. That was with Maxey also going 32 on 50%. Just indicates that Orlando has trouble with both these guys. I said I like the Sixers team total at 109.5 here. This is an Orlando team that's lost 3 straight on the road, including at Charlotte, and allowed 28 assists per game in those spots. So, I mean, if you want to tack on Embiid's assists, that's fine. But, I mean, he's just scoring at such a ridiculous rate. And Orlando struggles to guard a guy like him. I mean, everybody struggles. He's undeal-withable. Like, you can't – that's why, like, they're a good defense, but they have – chinks in the armor that Embiid can exploit in terms of they actually give up the second highest field goal percentage on mid-range, 15-19 foot shots since the All-Star break, and their bottom 10 at a little closer, 10-14. So Embiid is just going to kill them on the elbow. On 2 days rest this season, that's what I said is the key here. He's shooting 55%. He's scoring more than a point per minute, 33.5 in under 33 minutes per game. He's also scoring 36 at home this season and 36.5 in wins. So for him to get 31, I feel very confident about. I think you might even be able to ladder that up if you want some plus money.
Yeah, why don't we have Maxey props? I really want Maxey props as well. I mean, Maxey is, I mean, look, Embiid and Joker surpass any, you know, data about how good a team's defense is on any part of the floor. I don't care. Like Luka, same concept, right? It doesn't matter to me how good you are at defending XYZ. It's Joel. For Maxey, though, he is the perfect player for scoring against Orlando. Ball handling guard who likes to pull up without needing a pass to make his shots, and also just playing above the break and pick and roll ball handler all day. So, like, I would love to see some of that stuff. Not sure why we don't have props for him. He's playing in this game, but I was also looking at Joel. I think everybody's expecting him to have a big game. I think that depending on if you believe he's going to play, like, as many minutes as it takes to win this game, then this should be actually a pretty good win for them. Honestly, like I think -6.5 or so is a pretty good spread to still take Philly on sure. With the way that, especially the way that with Joel back, I mean, it's just instant that not only are you able to score down low and get to the free throw line, you are now the best defensive team down low in the league. Like there is not a better defensive player down low, in my opinion, than Joel Embiid. So
they might be waiting on Kyle Lowry. Who's questionable for Maxey, but I think it's more that Embiid is technically questionable. And so once we get like a shoot around report, that could obviously fluctuate Maxey's line a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to try and guess what this Philadelphia has become worse than the Miami Heat in terms of trying to guess what's going to happen to their injury report here, right? In terms of the games and shenanigans that they play. So it's a little bit weird to see that, but if Maxey comes out, you know, around 22.5, 21.5 points, I think you're still good to get him there. As I think he'll get close to 25, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about the previous MVP before Joel Embiid. And that is Nikola Jokic. And I'm taking his first quarter points at over 7.5, because I really wanted to target him. I love when he plays against San Antonio. I love when he plays against Wemby at so far this season and what we've seen there. And just like a really, he's like somewhat gentle about it. He's just like, I'm going to back you down now, bud. All right. And now I'm just going to put it up here with my touch. Sorry about that, pal. I didn't mean to get you under the basket, even though you're 7'4". And Wemby is a sweet guy that is trying his best out there, but he's going to bring it on offense. I like Wemby's props as well tonight. I know you're going to talk about that for a minute, but I had to give Joker some love. It's at 28.5. This game should be over by the half. I mean, it was not very close last time without the two studs, or the two other dudes playing for Denver, when it was really Jokic doing it on his own, right? We didn't have Murray in that one as well. So the 28.5 with Murray and Gordon around, not versus Rudy Gobert in a close game like he had the other day, where he just went completely off and took the majority of the shots and was doing it all, because we know when Joker's motivated, it's against guys like Rudy Gobert, and he's motivated in a slightly, like I said, gentler way against Victor Wembanyama. And this game shouldn't be as close, because it's a lot more little bro stuff, and there's no like actual adversary here in terms of the Spurs trying to compete with this Nuggets squad now. But the Nuggets need to make sure they get this one seed, and they do need to win out, because they don't have the tiebreaker against either the Thunder or the Timberwolves. I could want to say the Spurs. So with that in mind, like the Thunder are going to win tonight against Milwaukee. You got to take that one. And Minnesota has a pretty easy road ahead of them as well. So my main point here is like they got to win, but I don't trust that he'll be in there in the fourth quarter for enough to get the 29 points. That's at the total. In the first quarter stuff here, he's taking 6.5 at least field goal attempts per game over his last 10 in the first quarter. He's played all 12 minutes of all but two of those last 10 first quarters that he's played in as well. So they're keeping him in there early in the hopes that they can sit him for a bit more in the fourth quarter, which he has done as well over the last 10. Like I said, playing all 12 minutes for almost every game here in the first quarter, far fewer minutes in the fourth quarter over these last 10 as well, with a few blowouts in there and a few pretty close games also, and still not necessarily needing him for the entirety of those fourth quarters. So I always look at shot attempts, right? And if he's up at over the last 10 first quarters, he's up at about 8 field goal attempts per game, 7.5. Then like, I just need him to hit 4 of these, right? Like going 4 for 7, 4 for 8 for Nikola Jokic, not even counting the ability to get free throws and hitting one 3 per first quarter as well over his last 10. He's got 2 threes a couple times, missed a couple, and then has at least one right in about 7 of those last 10 in terms of the 3-pointers. So everything for me with Joker right now just leads towards he's going to do his damage from on the scoring early. The assists haven't even been there quite as much. He's like, fine, I got this, especially with dudes that have been missing. And now it's like the most vulnerable place on the court for the Spurs. I don't think they've stopped a center from getting his point total right since like basically maybe Nixon was in office. Like it's been a while. They've been awful against centers all season. So I'm going to keep riding with a center to at least do it in the first quarter here against Wemby and squad.
Yeah, the one thing I'm going to dispute is that you think they're going to walk over the Wembanyama Spurs, who have not only covered in 7 of their last 8 with Wembanyama, they've covered by almost 10 points a game every time. They're winning outright when they're like plus 11, including they covered by 10, losing by 5 in Denver, which you did mention. Denver is missing a couple guys. I don't think that they're going to come out with that killer instinct from the get-go. I mean, that doesn't mean Jokic doesn't score a lot. I think it's a fine pick that does kind of guard you against the blowout. But their MO has been to like, yeah, exactly. Like you said, to be gentle with these young Bucks and just play around a little bit. And then in the fourth quarter, put the kibosh on that and probably just win this game, but not cover it. And that's what I'm hoping, because I'm going to take Wemby's rebounds at 10.5, which is good money, minus 105 here. You can look at 3.5 blocks as well after he had 9 blocks against Joker. That's more of a fun bet, though. I think this rebounds is pretty good in terms of security, because I mean, he's fired up to face the Joker. Like both of them were motivated for different reasons when they got together. Obviously, Wemby sat the second half of the back-to-back. The Spurs get absolutely waxed. They're sitting other guys now, but he definitely wanted to play in this one. This is the second to last game for the Spurs, and I think probably the most important game left for him because of how he looks up to this guy. He goes for 23-15 with the 9 blocks last time out. Now, he did go under with just 9 rebounds the last time they were home against Denver. Nuggets shot 55% in that game. The pace was only 96. The pace was 100.5 in the rematch. Spurs are playing at a 100 pace in the since that game. And they just played at a 113 pace against the Thunder without Wemby. But so point is, I think it'll be a little faster. And also home road stuff for Wemby, 25.5 and 12.5 at home versus 17.5, 10.5 since the start of March. Now, I mean, the matchup, Denver, since the All-Star break, is 22nd in defensive rebounding rate, 27th in the first half. So they do not come out with that high intensity to say like, okay, we got to keep guys off the boards necessarily. Wemby averaging nearly 3 offensive rebounds at a 75% contest rate post All-Star break. So he will go in there, sky over people, even the Joker, who's a great defensive rebounder. Overall, 19.5 rebound chances in his last 6. That's 6th highest in the NBA, averaging 12. And guys don't often even contest that, like that wingspan, like as on the defensive end, like you're not going for an offensive rebound, like absolutely not. Joker, his contested rate is actually much lower on the road, only 48%. And I don't see him expending a ton of energy to worry about, again, battling Wemby for rebounds. I'm not taking the points here. I think they will find a way to maybe muck it up a little bit with him. Joker has his tricks, but I think there'll be enough rebounds to go around for young Wemby.
Interesting. Yeah. The rebounds, I mean, PRA doesn't even really scare me from Wemby. I'm not going to lie to you. I do think he's right for it. As much as Joker's motivated to just get easy buckets against Wemby and give him sort of an education on the offensive side of the floor, I don't think he really cares about like stuffing this kid on defense or really going all out in that sense at all. So I agree with that. I think even though Wemby's actually kind of meant more of an under for this, the games that he plays in, I do think that the over is a bit better of a play here with a lackadaisical Denver defense probably. And if you do think it's close, then I don't think you worry about the Jokic points in the first quarter versus the game. Because if you think it's going to be like that, then I still say 30 plus for Jokic in a game that, let's say, it's within 10 points for the majority of it. Then I think the 29 to 30 points for Joker tonight is also a solid play. He's been taking 20 shots a game, including against that Spurs squad. So we'll see. The only thing that gives me pause there on Joker, because I'm with you on Wemby, is the idea that like he didn't have dudes on his side last time to help him against Wemby and company, and so he just did it all himself. But I think a lot of guys are ripe to get their overs tonight in this game. But I'm going to close it out with actually probably my favorite bet of all of this, which is Rui Hachimura over 4.5 rebounds, and just leave it to the rebounds, to be honest. There's a couple of things. One, when we took Evan Mobley points the other day against Memphis, not a bad bet. Ended up not, he had 8 in the first quarter or whatever, so it dwindled at the end. But the rebounds were a play as well, because now you start to look at who's getting, like, if you're playing Memphis, you're gonna get rebounds. That was why I was told by a random fan online to take Mamu Kalashvili rebounds, is because he had just played Memphis and he went for 16 boards because Memphis missed 64 shots. They were 36 of 100 from the field that day. That is high school basketball stuff. It was crazy. So there's going to be a lot of rebounds available. And Rui, the two things I'm looking at here is there's rebounds available. Rui is firmly in that starting lineup, which is actually why this Lakers team has been, it's a major reason for why this Lakers team has been so good over the last 10 to 15 games, since they really just revamped that starting lineup to have him in it and really help them around the board, so that LeBron isn't like, I have to get 8 to 9 rebounds a game in order to for us to like maintain and not get Anthony Davis hurt because he's trying for 25 board chances a game, etc. So Rui comes in and really helps out with that. He's second on the team in rebound chances over these last 10. He's averaging 7.5 in that time. And the other thing I really need to rely upon for Rui is he's somewhat blowout proof. He's one of the dudes who does stay in towards the end, even though he's in the starting lineup. They do like to sort of close when they sort of just need to close and don't necessarily feel like they need AD and they need LeBron in there. They do have at least some form of D'Lo, Austin Reeves, and Rui now on the floor with a couple other guys like Jackson Hayes that they can now bring in and not necessarily need to play AD as much. I know they'd love to be able to give him some time as well against this Memphis squad. And as soon as AD comes off the floor, it's the only dude with more rebound chances than Rui. So this 4.5 number is just wrong, in my opinion. Like, I think at 5.5, it would still be a decent look. I think he's good for 7 to 8 boards tonight. And I didn't mind the points, but those have actually gone up a little bit. We've lost juice on the over for his 13.5 points. It's now at 14.5, because I think there is some logic to, and groupthink out there that like Rui's going to be in a blowout game at the end of the third and beginning of the fourth quarters. He's still going to be out there getting minutes to help us just crawl over that line. But I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if he had 5 boards by the time the third quarter is over.
Yeah, I was thinking about a LeBron or AD under because of what you're talking about. And yeah, without AD in the lineup, Rui went for 32-10 against the Memphis Grizzlies just a month ago, right? A few weeks ago. So I mean, clearly there's precedent for that. The Grizzlies now are far worse offensively. They had Triple J and Bane in that game. They scored 124. And like you mentioned, yeah, it was actually 68 missed shots against the Wembanyama Spurs, as they just repeatedly refused to take a high percentage look and get potentially blocked and embarrassed by Wemby. So, yeah. Maybe AD has a similar effect in causing some missed shots. And yeah, 4.5 rebounds is extremely low. I'm shocked that is this low.
Yeah, it almost feels too easy what we're missing here. I guess maybe they're worried about Timmy Allen on the Grizzlies coming in and grabbing some of those boards from him. But no offense, Timmy, you've looked good so far. So has Zaire Simpson, but maybe some names we'll see in the future for this Memphis team. That is all the time that we have for you in this one. Appreciate you guys following along all regular season, but we ain't done yet. We're getting in here to the postseason. We're going to have some futures up as well. If you want to know how we're betting on some of these teams to do in the playoffs here moving forward from a futures perspective, definitely want to check that out early next week. And then we get right into those play-in games. That's Tuesday of next week. So appreciate you all. Continue to follow along, and until we see you next, happy betting.